Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Aftermath. Today we'll be speaking with guest expert Lauren Bravo, journalist and author of What Would the Spice Girls Do? How the Girl Power Generation Grew Up. Let's hear what she has to say about the breakup of the Spice Girls. Hi Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So can you give our listeners a brief overview of your book?
Sure. So it's called What Would the Spice Girls Do? The question that's been on everybody's lips for decades. And the subtitle is How the Girl Power Generation Grew Up, which I think sums it up. So it's partly a nostalgia trip. There's a load of stuff in there about, you know, being a kid in the 90s and what that was like, all of the sort of paraphernalia that went with it. But it is also, I suppose, an examination of the impact that the Spice Girls had on a generation of young girls and the sort of line, I guess, that we can draw from that to the women that we have grown up to be in the modern world.
So a major part of the Spice Girls' appeal was the girl power mantra. Did they help or hurt in spreading this feminist message of the time?
Well, it depends who you asked. I mean, there was definitely quite a strong backlash, I think, from older people. I think particularly second wave feminists found the idea of girl power to be a bit reductionist. I think the, you know, they thought it was quite capitalist. It was a bit of an appropriation or a watered down version of women's lib, maybe. And I would imagine for a certain old guard of feminist who had marched for a lot of very basic rights in maybe the 70s and 80s, it felt like a bit of a cop-out, potentially. But the crucial thing is that the Spice Girls' main audience were young girls. So, you know, I was 8 years old when Wannabe came out, and I think that was the perfect age for the Spice Girls. Because what they did was sell us a kind of feminist starter kit. You know, I always say that it was more like a set of training wheels. And for a lot of their young fans, it was perhaps the first time that they had been exposed to those kind of ideas. It was the first time for a lot of us that we looked around and went, oh, maybe we are actually treated differently because we're girls, and maybe that's not okay. And they really gave us that confidence to speak up and shout back. And, you know, I think that was a great start for a lot of us on a sort of journey towards a feminist future.
So, but what was it about the Spice Girls that set them apart from other girl and boy bands of the time?
Well, I mean, there weren't a lot of other girl bands in that kind of arena. You know, we'd seen some amazing girl groups in the worlds of hip hop and soul. There were some brilliant American girl groups particularly. But in the UK, it was a boy bands as far as the eye could see, you know. And there was this kind of belief, I guess, in the music industry that only boys could sell records because girls bought pop records and girls, they thought, only wanted to buy pop records by boys. And the Spice Girls were really one of the first groups at that time that came along and challenged that. And particularly what was very different about them was the fact that they actually had a lot of control over their own image, which is a little bit contradictory to the idea some people have of them. We have this conception of them as this manufactured band. That's often the word that was used to sort of knock them down in the day. Oh, they're just manufactured. But when you do your research and you look into it and you read the stories, you find that actually they had a lot of autonomy. You know, they were not afraid to put their foot down and say, no, we want to dress this way. They refused to all dress in the same outfits, which was very unusual at the time. You know, most pop bands would all be dressed in sort of homogenous versions of the same thing. But the Spice Girls said, no, we want to express our own individual personalities. And, you know, there's nothing else you can do about it. That's what we're going to do. You know, and they were so outspoken. And I think the other thing that really set them apart was that perhaps they weren't the most talented. You know what I mean? They weren't. And they would be the first to admit it. No, I mean, look, I'm a mega fan, but I will hold my hands up and say they weren't the greatest singers. They weren't the best dancers. They knew that they weren't necessarily a polished outfit, but actually that really worked to their advantage. You know, fans loved that they could look at these women who just had the confidence to get up there and do it anyway. And I think that there's a lot we can learn from that even today. You know, it's okay to be a bit mediocre, but if you're prepared to have a go, that's great. That's enough.
I mean, did Posh Spice ever sing? I think I had to watch. I watched like 4 or 5 videos before I found one where, oh, there she is. It looks like she has a line.
Yeah. So do you know what she did? And in the early days, they were actually really militant about dividing up all of their audio parts equally. And they split all of their earnings 5 ways. So there was never a lead singer. They were really careful, even though I think, you know, most fans can agree that Mel C and Mel B had the strongest voices, but they always divided everything up 5 ways. But do you know what, Victoria, she was very self-deprecating. She knew where her skills lay and was always quite quick to sort of joke at her own expense in interviews. You know, she has a really great sense of humour. So I think that really set them apart as well, that they knew what they were good for and they knew that people didn't love them for their voices. They loved them for their spirit and everything they represented, I think.
Now, this might be a very personal question, but who was your favourite Spice Girl?
100% Jerry. absolutely. And look, she's not necessarily the one I would want to go to the pub with today. I think over the years, I've changed my opinion. It's now very much Emma or Mel C would be the ones that I'd want to hang out with. But Jerry back in the day was just phenomenal. She was an absolute force of nature. I'd never seen anything like it because she was so ballsy. She was so loud. She was so brazen in interviews. She was never scared to put her opinion across. And I think for a little girl, particularly because I was maybe a little bit loud and a bit bossy and a little bit too much potentially. And I think actually it was quite magical to see somebody doing that, to see a woman doing that and not being kind of judged for it or censored. It was really great.
So how do you think that they helped shape our generation of women?
Well, do you know what was interesting? So when I started writing my book, I'll admit, I was slightly cautious about the whole premise. And I was thinking, is this just something in my own head that I think that the Spice Girls kind of made us the women we are today? And maybe everybody else thinks that's nonsense. But as soon as I started interviewing other women, and I talked to about 70 or 80 different women of my age, and some men and, you know, all genders and different age groups. But so many people said that they felt they could draw a direct line from the Spice Girls to the feminism they practice today. And that was so interesting. And a lot of it came down to what I was saying about their confidence, you know, the fact that they were completely unafraid to shout back at interviewers. They would hold forth on things that they really had no right to talk about. So there's one famous interview where they started talking about the single European currency. They would talk about politics. They would weigh in on all of these debates that people didn't expect pop stars to have opinions on. and I think that's sort of forgotten today. So a lot of it was about that. And also the message of friendship, that, you know, that message of the girl gang, of boys will come and go, relationships will come and go. But if you have your friends around you, you've got your girl gang, then, you know, you're sorted. And that's something I think a lot of us really practice today. I think that's something that has been quite useful. I know, particularly in my own life, And yeah, something about their vision of femininity as well, the way that you were allowed to be high kicking, wearing, you know, camo pants and these huge shoes, and, you know, or you could be wearing a kind of baby pink girly dress and still be just as loud, just as opinionated. I think that that was really quite a breath of fresh air at the time. It doesn't seem like it now, I know, but back in the 90s, you know, the idea that there were five different ways to be a woman, that was, hey, it was still better than one.
That's right. I'll take it. And I mean, something you said, I actually had never thought of it, which was the idea of women helping women. I feel like that's almost a new concept where it's like there's space enough, for all of us. And that was started back then.
Yeah, completely. I think that if you look at a lot of their lyrics, something that I found really powerful when I was analysing all of these Spice Girls lyrics for my book, I mean, I say all of them, there aren't that many, but something that really comes across in so many of their songs was that often they were singing about friendship, they were singing about personal confidence, they were singing about ambition. A lot of the time, if they were talking about men or about relationships, it was often in this very sort of confident, very antagonistic way. You know, you've got lyrics like, if you really bug me, then I'll say goodbye. It was never about capitulating to men's needs or men's desires. And that was actually quite a contrast to a lot of the pop music of the day. So if you look at so many other songs, you had, you know, Leanne Rimes singing How Do I Live Without You, age 15. You know, you have Britney singing Born to Make You Happy. That was pretty standard. And actually, the Spice Girls songs all did something very different. It was all about confidence. It was all about getting what you needed. And a lot of it was about female solidarity. You know, they were never afraid to say it. There's one song where the lyrics are, you know, God help the mister who comes between me and my sisters. And that was something they really practiced it. They really believed it.
So the group was actually in the music scene for a very short time, considering, you know, how massively popular they were. What do you attribute to their quick departure from the industry, and how was the group's fan base impacted by Jerry's exit?
Wow. I mean, it was devastating at the time. You know, I remember I really felt like the world was falling apart. I couldn't believe it. But I think also it sort of felt logical that they would only burn bright for a short time, you know, because the sheer energy that they put into that career, they achieved more in 2 years than some bands achieve in 20. You know, they recorded two albums and filmed a movie, won countless awards, toured all over the world in the space of 2 years. They are actually one of the best-selling bands of all time. You know, I have a music journalist I talked to in my book says that if the Spice Girls had been a slightly different kind of group, we would have no problem calling them the female Beatles. In terms of the impact that they had. But of course, because they sung bubblegum pop and because they looked quite cartoonish, they never got the respect they deserve for that. But yeah, I think that the fact they broke up so quickly, it was obviously devastating to the fans. But in a way, it means that they stayed sort of preserved in amber. You know, we could look back and really remember the good times. And I know they went on and did another album after Jerry left, but I think the true fans like myself don't really acknowledge that so much. We like to pretend that it kind of, the curtain fell in March 1998 when Jerry read out that press statement. But I think they were very young as well, you know, and it sounded exhausting, the schedule they were on. So I'm not surprised it didn't last for years and years and years. But in a way, I think it helped retain the magic.
Do you think that the problems with their management attributed to their downfall?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. So the Spice Girls had a lot of drama with their management even before they released their first single. So the father-son duo that actually put them together, they had them in a house kind of training like a boot camp for a few months. And then the Spice Girls decided they actually wanted to flee. They kind of didn't want to stay with those managers anymore. They did this midnight flit where they all got in Jerry's car. They went and stole their master recordings from the studio, drove to Sheffield. It was all very dramatic. So they always had quite a tempestuous relationship with their management. There'd been lots of ups and downs. Of course, you know, Simon Fuller was the sort of Svengali always credited with creating them, but actually the truth was they auditioned him, not the other way around, and they managed themselves for about a year before they kind of found fame. So I think Yeah, definitely there were problems with the approach. I think he was working them very hard. I think that they wanted to make more creative calls and he wasn't letting them. There were lots of arguments, I think, about the sort of musical direction, the way they were going to go. But also, I think, you know, women in their early 20s who'd been thrown together into such an intense working relationship, I think anyone would find that difficult. And naturally, they were going to have differences of opinion. They were going to want to go in different directions. But it's interesting, Jerry has since said that she regrets making that call. You know, she really regrets leaving when she did. So I think they potentially could have carried on, you know, managing themselves. They could have found different representation. I don't think that the management was the main driving force behind that breakup. I think it was a lot of things.
So is it possible then that that girl, you know, Spice Girl fans outgrew them during this 2 to 4 year period, really 2 year period?
Yeah, it's an interesting premise. I think that, I mean, like I say, I was 8 years old when Wannabe came out. And I think by the time Jerry left, I was only 10, but potentially I was already moving into a different phase of my life. And it's true, I think, when you're a group that is aimed quite specifically at a very young demographic, and obviously they have fans of all ages, but they really catered for that age group. And I think that it's inevitable, you know, your fans will grow up and they'll start wanting different things. And we saw that very much with the third album, you know, recorded post-Jerry, where they were trying to really ape the kind of R&B flavour that was in the charts at the time. Not very successfully, I think a lot of people would agree. I think, you know, their real home was that pure pop. And so, yeah, there's definitely an element to which maybe we did grow up and we didn't need them quite so much anymore. But I think the wonderful thing is that actually new generations of fans are discovering them all the time. And when I went to see them live at Wembley last year, the audience was absolutely full of, you know, women in their 30s and then their teenage kids, their young kids, like, you know, 6-year-olds dancing along to them. And I really love that. I think I was surprised when I sort of hear younger people who weren't even born at the time still love the Spice Girls. You know, they just have that instant appeal.
It's true. So can you help us get to the bottom of what Zig Zig Ah means? Since we have you here.
Oh my God, I wish I could. I wish I could give you the definitive answer, but I also think it's one of those things that we are better off not really knowing. I think it can be whatever you want it to be. And that was always what they said in interviews as well. They got asked this all the time and there were various theories. There was something about an old landlord that they had when they were all living together in the early days who used to smoke a cigar on the toilet, I think. And that then, the word cigar then got kind of, you know, evolved into Zigga Cigar and then it became a big in-joke. But I think the loveliest thing about that word is, don't we all, with our friends, have those jokes that nobody else understands? I think it's just an example of that. I think it's something lost in the mists of time that we shouldn't try too hard to understand. And it's just part of the mystery and the magic of the whole Spice Girls thing, I think.
Okay, well, we're going to continue to debate it on our show. We will get to the bottom.
How about with your ankle?
Yeah. Okay, so at the end of the day, if you had to pick one person or concept, who or what would you blame for the breakup of the Spice Girls?
Oh, God, that's such a hard question.
It is.
Do you know what? I think she'd be okay with this. I'm going to say I blame Jerry. Well, she made that decision and she has owned it since, you know, and I don't blame her. I think that many of us in that position with that pressure on our shoulders and the world watching us every day, we would be tired too. We would want a break. I think a lot of us would probably make the same decision, but she has said that she regrets it. So yeah, I think let's lay it at Jerry's feet, at her Union Jack platformed feet.
It's sad, but I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a sad one to really wrap your head around.
But hey, it was a magical 2 years and I'm grateful for it. That's fine.
Now, I know that you also write about fast fashion and I've actually been trying to pin the fashion industry in our alarmist jail. Do you have any ideas for tragedies that, you know, could help us do that?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So,
yes.
You mean anything, any kind of crimes the fashion industry has committed that...
I mean, any historical tragedies that the fashion industry, that you think the fashion industry is really to blame?
Serious ones.
It doesn't have to be serious. We've already done the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
Oh,
and
okay.
They escaped that one.
So have you done the Rana Plaza factory collapse?
No.
Okay, so this is absolutely the real pivotal turning point, although unfortunately not enough of a turning point yet in history. But in 2013, there was an enormous collapse of a factory in Dhaka in Bangladesh, killing, I can't remember the exact figure off the top of my head, I'm afraid, but it was over 1,000 people and multiple thousands of garment workers were really badly injured in that. And that was, you know, one of the biggest catastrophes in the fashion industry to date. A lot of labels from fast fashion brands that we know and love, you know, on the British high street and in the US as well, were found in the rubble. And a lot of those brands said, we had no idea that our clothes were being manufactured in that factory. And that really highlights just the opacity of garment supply chains, which is a lot of the time those brands have no idea where their clothes are being made because orders are outsourced and then outsourced and then outsourced, which means that they don't have the ability to be able to audit those factories even if they wanted to. A lot of the time they have no idea what the garment workers are being paid. They don't know the conditions that they're working in. And that is really the crux of the problem that we have in fashion today. So thousands and, well, millions and millions of garment workers around the world, largely women aged 18 to 35, are being exploited. They're living on absolute poverty wages. And the brands, you know, can wash their hands of it because they can just say, we don't know where our clothes are being made. So, yeah, that is, I would say, one of the biggest tragedies in fashion. And unfortunately, everyone who has bought fast fashion over the past decade has kind of played a hand in that, you know?
Oh, well, we are going to have you back to talk about this one.
Oh, happy.
So,
oh,
I thank you for the recommendation.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for helping us get down to the bottom of who's to blame for the breakup of the Spice Girls.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I'm trying to think of what you would be. Producer Spice.
Yeah,
would you be on the show?
Producer. I guess I'd be Producer Spice, and then you would be like Host Spice.
How boring.
I know. These are horrible. Not fun at all.
Okay, but let me redo your intro. Hi, with us today we have producer Spice.
Hi, Rebecca. We're the worst Spice Girls ever.
But how about Lauren Spice? I mean, Lauren now, Bravo, what cool. A great guest expert. Yeah, so cool.
I can't wait to read her book.
And I just wish she would have been my friend. I wish we could have gone to a Spice Girls concert back then.
I know. I mean, she was so smart. And I love women talking in like a really respectful way about these, you know, quote unquote, like silly things that girls are into, because they really are meaningful and impactful. And that's why I really appreciate how earnestly she speaks about the Spice Girls.
Totally. And, you know, something that you brought up during the Taylor Swift Kanye episode, which is that people don't really take seriously the little, you know, things that are targeted towards like young women or little girls. You know, they don't take it as seriously. And that really stuck with me. And you know, Lauren is just, you know, leading the brigade. Stuff we do for little girls is so important.
It is. And I was so happy that she agreed with our verdict, even though I know none of us felt good about it. I do think, I mean, it really was like it all falls to Jerry in a way.
Yeah. It's so interesting how she had the same reaction to sending Jerry to jail that we did. We didn't want to. She didn't want to. But sometimes, you know, you do things without malice. I don't think Jerry meant to break up the Spice Girls, you know, but she was responsible.
Yeah. And I do think that in a way, I really do agree with Lauren when she says that the Spice Girls, she said they burned bright for 2 years. And part of the reason why we have such a perfect memory of them is because in a way, because they broke up, they never sort of had that decline that they would have if they stayed together. So she said they were preserved in amber, which I really actually like the visual of that.
That's true. Like you didn't have it. There are other pop stars who you've grown with. I guess Britney Spears is coming to mind, where, you know, she had a huge moment and was a big part of our cultural, of our generation culturally. But she's also grown with us. And so we've seen the good and the bad, and we've almost seen like too much behind the scenes.
Oh, but the Spice Girls. I mean, it's hard when, yeah, they're perfect still. But yeah, with Britney Spears, that is just so... I mean, we could do a whole episode on that. We should have Jen back. And Jen was on, of course, the Megxit episode. But it's just like when you're just a solo performer, you can't break up with yourself.
I bet you could, Amanda.
Yeah, I probably could. But just a few more points that I had written down from Lauren's interview. Let's see. Oh, I loved when she said this. She said that the Spice Girls weren't the most talented. They weren't a polished outfit, but they got up there and they did it anyway because it's okay to be mediocre. And I said to myself, that's what we do with The Alarmist every week.
That's right. The Spice Girls are my inspiration.
Right? I mean, we're not the most, we don't know the most about the tragedies. We're not the
best. That's for sure.
We're not the funniest, we're not the smartest, but you know what? We're doing the work.
Well, you know, we're selling ourselves a little short, but we have, but I think you're right that, and that has been my motto kind of like in the entertainment industry, because, you know, as women, you're made to feel like you have to be perfect in order to really deserve what so many other men just like, who aren't perfect get all the time, you know?
Yes.
It's just like, do it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just get it out there. And hopefully people will see its worth. And if they don't, then it doesn't matter. You see its worth. You see its value.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't have to be the best at something. You just have to like make it you. you know, because then it's going to at least be original. And I think that's what the Spice Girls were. And I really also like how she said that they were individuals and they did have control of their images, and that they didn't want to wear like the same matching outfits. And I think that's why they were so beloved. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And what I think is also cool about that is that they came together, like, even though they were different, like there was the sporty one and there was the posh one, like they were all able to be friends. And there's like an inclusivity message there that is really important, especially like just for children in general, you know, where you can get like you don't have to just find the other people who look exactly like you or think exactly like you. Like there's so much value in different voices and styles.
Yeah, totally. And there was one other thing that I just realized when you guys were talking. And okay, so do you remember how in our conversation with Georgia and Stosh, I said that freshman year of high school, I wore my platforms to school?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So now I realized that the Spice Girls broke up in 1998, correct?
Uh-huh.
I did not start high school till the year 2000. I don't think I knew they broke up.
It's for the best.
I don't even think I took that trip to Europe till after they broke up, where I bought all this paraphernalia. Like, I think I didn't realize I just don't remember having a moment where I learned they broke up and I was upset about it. I just think I like never knew and thought they just, I don't know. But I was like, this isn't adding up, this math, because I was 10 years old when Wannabe came out. And then I was definitely into the Spice Girls like for the next 4 years.
You were living in beautiful bliss, like this magical La La Land where the Spice Girls never broke up. You were so fortunate.
I must have been. Wow. If only we had never done this episode, I never would have known.
But now I want to think about like the other people in your high school who looked at you and were like, what is she doing? Should we tell her? Like, should we tell her?
And they said, just let her be.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you have any other notes?
Let's see. No, I think that was basically everything. I also just love talking to the experts because we get so much great lingo. Like when in the beginning, when Lauren was talking about the girl power movement, how some second wave feminists thought it was reductionist. And she mentioned Clayton's keyword, capitalism. She said a lot of people thought that the third wave feminism was kind of capitalist.
Right. I mean, it's so interesting how the feminist movement has really gone through these different waves. What is so cool about it is that it feels like a movement. You know, of course, every single movement goes through so many different waves. It's like a human being or something. Like, yeah, it's growing up.
You know, like most human beings, not me. Wearing my platforms.
You're still wearing them right now.
I think they're still at my parents' house. I need to dig those out. If they do still exist, I will start wearing them again. But I guess now we're in the fourth wave of feminism. But I suppose you and I came of age during third wave feminism, which makes sense why we like the Spice Girls so much.
Yeah. I also liked what she said about the, you know, she really clarified the management issues.
Yes.
She made it really clear, like, while they really did have a role in overworking them and their exhaustion, they also, they were bigger than that. And they did take control, so they weren't defined by their managers. So that was interesting.
Yeah, they built themselves up and they tore themselves down.
Yeah.
As you know, that's as right. It should be.
As it should be.
So the verdict stands.
It stands and the slap stands, I think. You know?
I think so too.
They had their moment and they did good They did justice in the world. I'm trying to find the right word. They did God's work in the 2 year period. And that was that. That was that. So
yeah, we nailed it.
Wow. I feel pretty proud about that, honestly.
I do too.
So do we have any housekeeping things for our listeners? I haven't received any photos with tagged like reviews tagged in photos for our giveaway.
So you're referring to, we put out a call to our listeners to rate and review the podcast, screenshot it, post to Instagram and tag us. And that hasn't happened yet, but it's only been a couple of days because we're recording this early. So next week we're going to announce someone, we're going to pick one of those people who does that and they're going to get a free alarmist t-shirt or, you know, maybe
any
just a merch item of their choice. If they want the touch tool, they can have the touch tool.
Even though it's early, has it come out yet on the merch page?
It is on the merch page. So yes, it's officially been released. But yeah, so go ahead and do that. Leave us a 5-star review and a rating. Post it to Instagram, and we'll enter you in the blind drawing to win a piece of alarmist merch. And I don't know, Rebecca, have we gotten any new reviews?
Let's see. I don't think so. I don't think so. And that's the issue, Amanda. I mean,
well, that is an issue. Although it's only been a day. It's only been a day since that episode released. So we'll give it time, but just a reminder to go ahead and do that. I mean, if you're interested in a free t-shirt.
Yeah, it really. And if you're interested in helping out our show, because it really does help us. We need to get on those charts. We need to spread the word about the show so we can keep doing episodes. I mean, we have barely scratched the surface with all of the tragedies that need to be covered. I mean, just today we learned about a new fashion tragedy that I'm so excited, because if I could get my dear fashion industry, I'll be as happy as Clayton the Clam.
I am worried that once you pin the fashion industry, you're going to want to stop doing the podcast.
Never. Because that fashion industry, it gets out of jail. It's very slippery. Mm. It's just like toxic masculinity and capitalism. They're constantly sneaking out. So you got to keep them in
check. And I have a question about fast fashion.
Mm. Yes.
I know that maybe you know this, but I know that fast fashion like Zara, Forever 21, like I don't shop at those places. Is Madewell and J. Crew, those are also fast fashion?
They are. I believe so.
Okay, so I shouldn't be shopping there either.
We should have asked her. I think anything that manufactures, it depends, because you can look at their like Everlane for some. You know, they're a big, you know, fashion company, a clothing company. But I think they have like sustainable practices. It depends what their practices are. So,
okay. So I need to do some more research, because
yes,
I have been looking online, doing a little online shopping. I never buy anything. I just load it into my cart and then I wander off and let it sit there for months. That's just kind of my stress relief. But I'm thinking I'm going to pull the trigger on some, I don't know, maybe some new sweatpants.
Yeah,
so
we
I'll
need
have
them.
To check
need
into sustainability. Yeah, but I think we should put this Bangladesh factory collapse on the docket, and we can learn more about fast fashion.
Already on the list. I've already done it. It's already there. So
amazing.
Okay, well, I can't wait to talk about it. And let us know about J. Crew and Madewell, because I do like those brands.
I know. And they have so many. You know, it's if they have so many sales, it's probably fast fashion.
Right.
It's too good to be true.
Yeah, too good to be true. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. And tune in next week. We will be discussing The Trail of Tears. It's going to be a heavy one.
Earios. Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.